2 of your Tuesday edition of Justice and Drew is underway. As we mentioned earlier, get that iHeartRadio app if you haven't already. Download it. Click the little podcast button. Search for Justice and Drew. Hit the follow button. You'll be updated every time we post new episodes, including the epic post-show podcasts.
That's right.
Where you get to hear us record promos.
It really
telling
is
you,
the best.
It's sexier than it sounds.
People seem to enjoy it. Just saying.
It's very entertaining.
Hey, before we get to political stuff real quick, this is kind of fun. NASA is about to grab a piece of asteroid. It's out of the Washington Post. Apparently, it's harder than it sounds. It's an
It sounds pretty hard.
Yeah, it's an Empire State-sized asteroid. It's called Bennu. Oh, Bennu. Oh. B-E-N-N-U, Bennu.
That sounds really cute.
It's so small, and its gravity is so minimal that if you stood at Bennu's North Pole and jumped, you would achieve escape velocity and go soaring off into the void.
Don't do that.
Yeah, don't.
I'm not going to do that. I wouldn't recommend it.
For those that don't know, asteroids are like super important for NASA to come in contact with because they could have been floating through the cosmos for a long time, and they are likely to be carrying like a whole bunch of junk.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, not like aliens.
Yeah,
you know, like yard sale stuff.
Debris.
Yeah, it's just, you know, there's bacteria and water.
DNA.
And they say if they're going to find life, you probably find it on an asteroid. For the past 2 years, the OSIRIS-REx spacecraft has sailed across the solar system by the light of the stars, like ancient mariners and the Apollo astronauts. It needed the constancy of constellations to navigate the dark unknown. All that changed Monday when the NASA probe finally reached its target, the Empire State Building-sized asteroid called Bennu.
That's a big asteroid.
That's pretty big.
Empire State-sized asteroid.
Yep.
Okay. So it's not like, you know, it's not an asteroid that's like hurtling towards us.
Well,
and they're going to try to take a chunk out of it to divert it.
Well, Bennu has a 1 in 2700 chance of hitting Earth about 200 years from now.
Okay, I won't be around.
So we got some time. So researchers figured it would be good to glean some insights about the asteroid's fate and how it might intersect ours. Why does this feel like the precursor to, like, a story where we flash forward 200 years, where we came in contact with the thing, had a chance to move it and did it, and now it's on a collision course right, to end all life on Earth, right?
Even 200 years, they're going to be cursing Trump's name.
Actually, that's a really good story idea. I'm going to write that down. Sitting at Mission Control in the Denver office is Lockheed Martin, which operates the spacecraft. The engineer, Yavi Cerna, waited for the signal indicating the OSIRIS-REx had begun the burn needed to bring it close to its target. So it was within 12 miles of the Bennu surface, about the distance between the White House and NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center. So images began to pour in. Everybody got really excited. And now they're hoping to uncover clues about the birth of planets, the origins of Earth's water and life, and may uncover potentially useful natural resources such as organic molecules and precious metals.
Neat.
I dig exploration, man.
Yeah, man. Me
it's
too.
Cool. It's
me
cool.
too.
It's cool that they're doing this, and people get super, super excited, and they should. But yeah, there was a, I forgot what, speaking of podcasts, there was a podcast I was listening to where they were getting into detail about how asteroids and comets were some of the things that NASA was really pointing towards to try to get some answers, you know, from the cosmos because of all the junk and stuff they could be carrying, you know, so. If you've ever seen Spider-Man 3, you know, or Venom, for crying out loud, you know, you got to be careful if they land on Earth.
Yeah, you don't want to bring back a symbiote.
No, absolutely not. That might be the stuff of science fiction.
It's hard. You know, the lines are all blurred.
It's a true story.
Lines are all blurred. I watched a documentary. Actually, it was like a trailer for a documentary yesterday on Captain Marvel. So, you know, with the stuff they're doing now,
seriously,
it's really amazing.
Yeah, yeah. Well, if they want to bring some Captain Marvel to Earth, I mean, I'm okay with that. That trailer looked pretty awesome.
It did look pretty great.
She seemed very nice.
I like Captain Marvel.
I like Captain Marvel.
Spend time with her.
I'm a fan, you know. Well, just learn the ways. That's all we're saying. We should really get to relevant material from the Hill.
You can take a chunk out of my asteroid.
House Republicans are preparing for Drew, just make that clear. Sometimes people get us confused.
That one was true.
That was Drew.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I'm John Justice, and House Republicans are preparing for a life in the minority after 8 years in power. And the incoming chairman of the campaign arm is tasked with figuring out a way to regain the majority in 2020. We're talking about Representative Tom Emmer.
That's right. He's got a big job ahead of him.
Yeah, he's got his work cut out for him following the stinging midterm election last month, according to The Hill. Why does that feel more painful than it should?
Yeah.
Because it was.
It was pretty stinging.
Yeah. Emmer is succeeding Representative Stivers as the NRCC chairman. Said in an interview with The Hill last week that Republicans will need to counter Democrats' fundraising levels, improve the party's messaging strategy, and put added focus on attracting strong candidates.
Yeah, the fundraising, that's obviously here in Minnesota, we deal with that every cycle. That is a big challenge. And last time Tom was on the show with us, he talked about all of the mechanisms that Democrats have in place to allow for those direct small donations, and that Republicans have just been behind the game in that field.
Yeah,
and that's going to be a big focus of his.
Well, I love how direct Tom is. He said this in the Hill article: they recruited great candidates with great resumes and no voting records. Now I think they're going to run into some challenges because they also recruited people that really aren't good fits with their party on that side of the aisle. So he's already putting in place the mechanisms to try to go and win back those seats that he believes are winnable or in play for 2020, and flipping them after they flipped from red to blue last month. So he's already, like, right on top of it.
And he makes a really good point that, they might have recruited attractive candidates, but, in 2 years, those candidates are going to have a record. They're going to have a record that they're going to have to defend. The people that put those candidates in office have very high expectations, expectations that are probably, largely unachievable with, a Republican control of the Senate and a Republican in the White House. So I think it's going to be a very frustrating 2 years for a lot of these progressive activists who worked so hard to elect these representatives. They're going to expect receipts.
Right.
They're going to expect results. They're not going to get the results that they want. There's just simply not. The numbers aren't there. The control of the Senate isn't there. And Trump is still president. So it's going to be really interesting to see the reaction of that base if they are understanding of that, of the realities that are in place. And if those expectations are tempered by the fact that they don't have control of the Senate, by the fact that they don't have control of the White House, or if in 2 years they're going to punish, some of these people that they sent to the House because they didn't get their impeachment and they didn't get their Medicaid for all. And they want all these things. They want them now. I don't know. I don't know how realistic the expectations are of the people that sent this Democrat majority to the House.
Well, and it affords, and this happens when you have shifts of power like this, and I'm really glad, having Emmer serving in the public, you still, kind of renews my faith in the system, knowing there are individuals like him that are there. But it does afford the GOP and Tom Emmer in his efforts the opportunity to focus on 2020 with there being the minority. He said that Republicans need to focus on bringing in diverse ideas as much as they need to bring in diverse candidates. We want more women. We want more people of color. Yes. But you know what? We see people that have a diversity of ideas, he said. We don't care in the end about their gender, about their religion, about their race. That shouldn't be the defining factor of any human being. It should be
controversial.
They bring to the table and share their ideas, right?
And what's sad is that, yes, that is going, what he said there is absolute truth, common sense, how any rational human being should look at these types of decisions. 100% agree with him. It's going to be spun in a controversial manner.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And it shouldn't be.
Because identity politics are so prevalent and they're so strong. This is going to be spun in some way to try to make Tom Emmer look like a monster. But he's 100% correct.
And we're going to get into a perfect example of that coming up later on in the hour. A couple of different stories. The Minneapolis School District releasing disturbing results of workforce diversity study. That was from a handful of days ago. And just from today, that was Channel 5 out of the Star Tribune. Minnesota schools struggle with widening racial gap between students and teachers. And the whole focus is this idea that the kids cannot be properly educated if the teacher in front of the classroom doesn't look like they do. I mean, it's ridiculous that it's gotten to that point, but that's the point where it's gotten right now.
It really is insane.
All right. Ballot harvesting. Sounds spooky.
What is it?
It kind of is. But don't fret. I think I can make everybody feel better if you're worried about it. So this was a minor change in California's election laws. It had a major effect on last month's midterm elections that saw Democrats steamroll their Republican rivals and claim all but seven of the Golden State's 53 House seats. Despite holding substantial leads, and this is a story in a second. This is from Fox News. This is a secondary story from the Daily Caller we'll get into with one specific story that we'll spend some time on because it's heartbreaking. Despite holding substantial leads on Election Day, many Republican candidates in California saw their advantage shrink, then disappear as late-arriving Democratic votes were counted in the weeks following the election. Now, there's no hard evidence available. Many observers point to Democrats' use of ballot harvesting as a key to their success in the elections. So Neil Kelly, he's a registrar for voters in Southern California's Orange County, told Fox News, in Orange County, once seen as a Republican stronghold of the state, every House seat went to a Democrat. After an unprecedented 250,000 vote-by-mail drop-offs were counted. So the deal was that Governor Jerry Brown signed into law.
Really hard to not be skeptical.
I know.
Really, really difficult to not be skeptical of massive amounts of fraud.
Well, here's what the law was. So AB 1921, this was 2 years ago, California Governor Jerry Brown signed this into law. It legalized the so-called practice of ballot harvesting. Previously, only a family member or someone living in the same household was permitted to drop off mail ballots for a voter. But the new law allowed anyone, including political operatives, to collect and return them for the voter. What I think, though, in the absence of corruption, right? Because I'm with you, Drew. Right. If you have, and there's stories in these articles that lay out how you had the Democrat political machine was basically going out and hounding individuals who don't normally go and vote to cast a vote, saying, "Hey, we'll come by and actually get your ballot for you."
Yeah. Yeah. We'll come by. We'll bring you the ballot.
We'll bring you the ballot.
We'll watch you fill it out. And maybe we'll fill it out for you.
Right.
You know, if you need help. And then we'll take it in.
Without having the evidence of corruption, I think the one thing we can look at and point back to was when President Barack Obama was in office. And I remember there was quite a bit of conversation in 2009, 10, 11, and 12 as social media became more prevalent and was used more widely, especially by the voting public. We talked at length about how the Democrats and the Obama administration and the Obama campaigns were doing a much better job of tapping into social networking and reaching potential voters. We all know about the sweep of young voters that initially put President Barack Obama in office. This feels like, again, minus the potential that there was fraud going on, this feels like another circumstance where the Democrats were way ahead of the curve on this, and the GOP was behind the eight ball. Because it doesn't matter what party you are. Either party can go and do this. And it feels like the Democrats just really took advantage of what this law did starting back 2 years ago that Governor Jerry Brown signed into law and just were completely... The Democrats were way ahead of the curve on being able to take advantage of this.
Yeah, and what they did was they went to people who they thought might vote Democrat, but probably weren't an active voter. And that's, you know, and that increased the turnout for Democrats. They went there, they brought them the ballot, you know, probably told them, you know, who to vote for.
Right.
No, you know, I don't have any question in my mind that they didn't assist in filling out the little bubbles a little bit, even though they're not supposed to. And then said, "All right, cool. You voted. We'll take it in for you." I don't like this. You're right that both parties can certainly do it, but I do not like this idea that political operatives, you know, they already have such granular data when it comes to, you know, targeting households and which, you know, which addresses and zip codes they want to focus on and target when it comes to trying to get voter turnout. Not actually have them come to your house with a ballot. No, I don't like that one bit.
Well, and, you know, let this serve as another good example of the slippery slope. I know that people go and roll their eyes often when you use that argument when it comes to particular laws that seem benign on their face. And then, you know, we'll sit back and go, okay, you're doing this now, but it could lead to A, B, C, and D. This is a really good example of that. When you talk about your early voting, when you talk about your mail-in ballot, you know, this is your, now you've got a circumstance where I'm sure that California Governor Jerry Brown used that as the example. Well, you know, if we're allowing individuals to vote by mail, then, you know, it shouldn't just have to be a family member or somebody living in the household. What if those individuals can't get around? What if they're low income and doesn't have a car? Anybody should be allowed to go and grab that ballot and take it and deliver it to the proper ballot counters.
And how do we know that all these ballots actually came from people's houses?
Right.
How do you know? I mean, how do you know these were just filled out on behalf of people and then showed up? Because, you know, if you're Sally, you know, and a ballot shows up that says, hey, this is Sally's ballot. We went and picked it up for her. What if Sally never voted?
Yeah, right.
You don't know.
Yeah.
There's no way to know that, you know, this is just rife for all sorts of fraud.
Well, yeah.
And you'll never know if it's happening or not because there's no mechanisms in place to put a check on it.
Yeah, and that's a great point. I mean, think about the conversations that we've had and the stacked phone lines from the calls that we got when we start talking about, you know, election day and voting and the people that are so surprised when they can walk up and they don't have to show their ID to get their ballot. This is like so far beyond that, right?
Right?
You could show up to entire housing complexes. Right?
Yep.
Hey, we're having a cookout. Yep. Everybody come on down for our cookout. We got burgers and dogs.
Here?
And
you got 2,000 people here. Well, I just happen to have 2,000 ballots.
Amazing.
In my car.
So grab yourself a dog.
Right.
Grab yourself a Coke.
Yep. We got a food truck out front.
Here's a ballot. There you go. Oh, you got to fill the ballot out first. Oh, you don't want it? We'll do it for you. Yeah. Great. It caught the attention of Speaker Paul Ryan. He told the Washington Post, we were only down 26 seats nationally the night of the election. And 3 weeks later, we lost basically every California race. Point being, when you have candidates that win the absentee ballot vote, win the day of the vote, and then lose 3 weeks later because of provisionals, that's really bizarre.
Yes, it is bizarre.
How bizarre.
And the problem is, you know, the Democrats counter this going, what? We're just counting all the votes. That's all we're doing. Why are you against us counting votes? You know, Republicans, they don't want all the votes to be counted. You know, they counter with these really base arguments that most people go, well, yeah, I mean, all votes should be counted.
Right? Yeah.
There's zero integrity in this system. Zero. There is no mechanisms in place to detect or counter fraud. And don't try to even come at me with this idea that, oh, there's no voter fraud. People cheat to win everything, whether it's a meaningless sporting event or a meaningless online video game. You don't think they're going to cheat to win an election? Give me a break.
Well, and the fear here is, and we'll get into more of this and take your phone calls coming up at 651-989-5855. You can use a #250 on your smartphone. Look, again, even in the absence of that potential fraud, this is not changing anytime soon. As a matter of fact, I would imagine you're going to see a lot, many states trying to go this direction. The GOP is going to need to have to catch up to try to do something to counter it.
Yeah.
I don't know what that is, and I don't say counter fraud with fraud, but they're going to need to do a better job if this ballot harvesting ends up being something that's adopted on a nationwide level.
Hey.
Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130 and 103.5 FM. Welcome back to your Tuesday edition of Justice and Drew. The phone number, you want to take part, 651-989-5855, or just hit #250 on your mobile device and say TCNT. That'll get you right in there where you can wish Sam a lovely good morning.
Aw, that sounds really nice.
Daily Caller, as the polls closed on Election Day last month, six California Republican House candidates, including Representatives Dana Rohrabacher, Steve Knight, and Mimi Walters, were ahead in their respective races. However, the absentee and provisional ballots rolled in over the intervening weeks, and all six lost to their Democratic opponents. So they call it ballot harvesting.
I'm shocked.
passed as a barely noticed change in the state's vote-by-mail procedures in 2016 and then signed into law by Governor Jerry Brown. California's AB 1921 allows voters to give any third party, not just a relative or someone living in the same household as the previous law did, to collect and turn in anyone else's completed ballot. Ballot harvesting, critics say, the practice is ripe for fraud. And then we'll get into a story here in just a moment.
That's a nice way of putting it.
By the way, I like how it's called ballot harvesting, right? And I don't know who came up with that, and I have no evidence to point to, you know, any sort of, you know, collective that got together in a star chamber to decide, ooh, call it harvesting because that's a nice thing, you know. But it does have that kind of, oh, it's a harvest, you know?
Right?
Everyone likes to have the harvest.
Well, we planted these seeds, you know. We planted all these seeds of, you know, subsidized housing and government programs, and now those seeds are blooming, and we have to go harvest what we've grown. I mean, seriously, you know, you don't think they're going to go to, you know, any area where you've got, you know, large portions of the populations whose lives are being subsidized in some form or another. They're going to go to them and say, look, you want to... You know, you want to lose all of these great things that we give you, you know, if so, you know, you need to vote, and this is who you need to vote for, with the massive amount of illegal population in California. You really think that they didn't get a ton of those votes, too?
You don't need a very big cork board, very much yarn or pushpins to begin to connect the dots when it comes to ballot harvesting Democratic policies.
Those dots are really close together.
that keep
and they're big
areas, you know, pushed down, right, under the guise that the government is here to help you. I think we should change it. I think it should be a ballot reaping. That doesn't sound nearly as lovely as ballot harvesting. It's ballot harvesting season again.
So they
time for more GOP years to lose.
They make this ballot harvesting legal. It results in more Democrats getting elected. Do you really think there's any chance whatsoever that they're going to pass any kind of measure or, you know, to provide some degree of integrity to this? Of course not. They're just going to make it easier. They're just going to make it even more. And if you try to argue against it, they're going to say, why don't you want all the votes to be counted?
Right.
Why don't you want to make it easier for people to vote and for those votes to be counted? Why do you hate democracy?
Listen to this, the case of Korean American GOP candidate Young Kim, right? Was one of the most prominent examples. On election night, Kim held an 8,000 vote lead over her Democratic opponent Gil Cisneros. And even, this is the part that just breaks your heart, and even attended the freshman orientation in Washington, D.C. before watching her lead and her victory slowly evaporate over subsequent weeks. I mean, can you even imagine? It's like Paul Ryan said, you know, where when you win the absentee ballots and you win the in-person vote, where I come from, you win the election. I'm not saying there's anything nefarious about it because I just don't know, but we believed we were up about 6 seats in California the night of the election. And now I think we lost just about every single one of those seats. And here's an individual that, under normal circumstances, actually went to D.C., went to orientation, and probably was getting texts going, we lost another 1,000. Oh, we lost another 750. We booked your plane flight back home. sad and pathetic. Aww. and not right by any stretch of the imagination. Let's see here. You get back to the story. Consider Lulu, who was recorded trying to harvest what she thought was Democratic voter's ballot in Representative Knight's district. In a new service, said Lulu, for, like, you know, people who are supporting the Democratic Party. The San Francisco Chronicle reported that 250,000 such ballots were used in Orange County alone, resulting in the Democratic sweep there. The San Francisco Chronicle quoted Republicans who admitted that Democrats clearly beat them at the new game and that to compete, they would have to conduct their own ballot harvesting efforts. So, listen, it could just be a case when you hear that the GOP didn't even do it. Like, they didn't even take part. Like, they didn't even get involved or even try to stem.
It says in one of the articles, I forget which one, I'm looking at two different articles here, but there's a piece in one of them where, you know, some state GOP officials say, you know, we were aware of this, Matt Fleming, you know, we did it ourselves, we paid attention to election laws, but I don't know. I mean, you know, Democrats consistently out hustle Republicans when it comes to efforts like
yeah.
this. So yeah, I wouldn't be surprised at all if it, you know, whatever effort there was by the GOP to keep up with this, it was maybe half hearted. They always seem like they're a step behind.
Well, and I would be curious, and I don't know what the rules are in Arizona, but I'm thinking specifically of the Kyrsten Sinema Martha McSally race, because that was a very, very similar circumstance that ended up happening. I mean, that race was called.
Yeah.
That race was called. I mean, McSally won. And then slowly, just, you know, given a long enough timeline, she didn't. She sat at home and recorded a video with her dog and yeah. congratulated Kyrsten Sinema. Go, it's cool. I'm here with my dog. It's fine.
Remember when I won this election?
I remember. It was like 2 days ago.
That long ago, I won.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just keep counting until you get the results you want.
One last point from this. AB 1921, group opposed to the bill, wrote this. AB 1921 would allow anybody to walk into an elections office and hand over truckloads of vote-by-mail envelopes with ballots inside. No questions asked. No verified records kept. It amounts to an open invitation to large-scale vote-buying, voter coercion, granny farming, and automated forgery.
All right, I am against farming grandmas.
I am against that as well.
Me also.
Steadfastly oppose the harvesting of grandmas.
No, of grandmothers.
No granny farming, yeah. people.
Separate from the voting issue altogether.
Yes. Yeah. AB 1921 solves no problem that simple stamp can't solves no problem that a simple stamp can't solve.
Unless a president dies.
Unless the president, a president dies and everything needs to stop,
shut down the mail for a day.
That's right.
This is coming to Minnesota. I mean, don't think that
right now. Can we stop it?
This will not make its way here.
Call state police.
You know, this is California tends to be the harbinger for things like this.
And doom. Harbinger of doom.
Other states, yeah. If you're a conservative, yes. Other states will pick up on this. This is a practice that will continue. And the most nefarious part about it is, you know, the more that they're able to implement ballot harvesting, the more elections they're going to win, which makes it even harder to fight back against it.
Minneapolis School District releases disturbing results of workforce diversity study, according to Channel 5. It's really only disturbing if you're looking through a lens of color. We will give you the details on this coming up on Twin Cities News.
Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130 and 103.5 FM. Welcome back to your Tuesday edition of Justice and Drew. You are 1 hour away from being graced by the presence of Pete Hegseth from Fox News. He'll be on the show with us at about 8:35 this morning, so stick around. You don't want to miss that.
Did you hear, real quick, and we're going to get to this this disturbing results of workforce diversity study. Did you hear what Apple CEO Tim Cook said about banning people from social media platforms?
Yeah.
I didn't.
Yeah. It's his duty.
He said,
whoa.
Apple, back up. Apple CEO Tim Cook suggests, you ready? You sitting down, Sam?
I am.
I can see you're sitting down.
I am.
He said, it's a sin to not ban certain people from social media and technology platforms. First off, just real quick. Okay, I'm just going to make a point on that. You know, it shouldn't just be throwing that around.
Oh,
I'm just saying, just my own little, it's a sin. Shut up. No, it's not. All right, he goes on to say this. Sorry, I just had to rant there for a moment. We only have one message for those who seek to push hate, division, and violence. You have no place on our platforms. You have no home here. Look, here's the thing on that. I get it. Like, I get it from the standpoint of, you are a social media platform provider, so you should have some standards of which you would go and boot off things that you do not want cluttering up your social media platform. Things that are indecent. I get that.
Sure.
That's not what he's talking about, though.
No.
And who gets to pick and choose? Tim Cook?
Yes.
Ugh.
Yes.
Awful.
Yes.
That's horrible.
It's it is. It is. When you think of the, you know, just the absolute filth that gets spread about via social media. You know, I mean, just, you know, obscenities and obscene content, pornographic content. It's just litter. It's everywhere.
Yeah.
That we don't have a problem with. And I'm not saying I'm personally offended by that.
Sure.
But I don't, you know, I don't understand why, you know, suddenly they're like, that's all okay. Right. But, you know, oh, somebody spread hate. Like, who determines what's hate?
Right. They do.
I know. It's such a superfluous concept, and it can just change from one day to the next.
There are individuals on a daily basis that use either the hashtag TCNT or just tweet. Their whole Twitter feeds are devoted to nothing but legitimate hate. That's all that it is. Like, things that we would not be allowed to by iHeartRadio for good reason to go things because they're not appropriate to say.
Right.
Right? Now, I'm not saying those people should be banned by any stretch of the imagination. That's not my point.
No.
My point is that if you're talking about the hate, you are just ignoring a huge, huge chunk of individuals whose Twitter feeds are just devoted to pure hatred. But because it's for Trump, because it's for the GOP, it's totally acceptable.
Yeah. No, they're not against hate. They're against, you know, certain kinds of hate.
Right.
But if you hate the right people, you're totally fine. You'll get a blue check mark next to your name. You'll be verified. You'll be given additional credibility as long as you hate the right people.
Well, and let it be said, too, even if you believe that Trump is the worst peddler of hate, right? Okay. Even if you believe that, if you believe he's all these horrible things, it does not justify you being the same way. And that's what I just don't get. And it continues to confuse me. I mean, look, I get it. I understand. I've been doing this long enough. I do. But just being rational, it just the justification that people have, just because you think that Trump is all of these things and going to do all these horrible things, I get it. You're entitled to your opinion. It doesn't justify you being hateful and saying all those hateful things. It's just not that's just not how it's supposed to work. But again, if you want to be a hypocrite, sure. But that's what you're being. You're just being nothing but a hypocrite because you are lowering yourself to the same standard that you keep believing that you're pushing back against, this individual that you hate. But it doesn't justify you being just as bad. It takes away all your credibility, is really what it does, and just turns you into nothing more than just a textbook definition of a hypocrite. Hey, man, if you're cool with that, yeah, hashtag TCNT. Sure, you're hammering away at a keyboard right now.
Yes. Yes, they are. I can hear it from here.
I can.
I mean, you know, look, ultimately, we talked about this with Pete. I think it was last week. You know, there's gonna have to be some competitors emerge.
Yeah.
To these platforms. Because, yes, these platforms can institute whatever sort of hypocritical standards they want to institute. I would never advocate for any sort of government intervention or law regulation trying to prohibit or demand access to these platforms if they want to ban conservatives and they want to make it harder for conservatives to get their message out. Private companies, man.
Yeah. You know,
they can do that. If I'm going to be consistent, I have to be able to be able to say that. What ultimately needs to happen is that the competitors are going to have to emerge. Competitors that actually value free speech. Competitors that actually, you know, when they say they want to be a platform for the free exchange of ideas and speech, you know, they actually mean it.
Yeah, and those competitors that hopefully emerge, just adopt the regular standard social norms of decency, right? That's what it needs to be. That is, it doesn't need to turn into the 4chan Reddit version of Twitter, but what it needs to do is we do have in society sort of our set standards of decency. At least we did. You know, things that universally just kind of go, icky, get rid of it. We know what they are, right? Yeah. Twitter doesn't even bother with those. They say they do, but they don't even bother with those.
No.
You just need a platform that's going to say all voices will be heard. We'll do our best job to get rid of the icky, based off of societal standards and, you know, kind of like workplace standards when it comes to discrimination and things of that nature, things right. that you would allow to be safe at work, that kind of stuff. Once that happens, it starts to gain momentum. Yeah, Twitter's going to be in big, big trouble. But right now, Twitter and Facebook, they're like, hey, man, there ain't anybody out there right now, so we can kind of do whatever we want.
And they are doing whatever they want.
Ugh. All right. Let's go to more gross. Minneapolis Public Schools. This is out of Channel 5. This is from last week, and there's a follow-up we have, too. Have 5,300 employees district-wide. A third of them are of color. When one looks at the roster of just teachers, diversity drops down 17%. The EDIA study confirmed the Minneapolis School District has a predominantly white workforce.
Okay.
Okay.
And?
Right. Right. I wish it stopped there.
Yeah. And?
We.
Is that why it's failing? If you could demonstrate to me that that's why it's failing, then we've got a story. Then we could talk about taking some action to change that. But if that's not why it's failing, because let's all agree that it is failing.
Right.
If that's not why it's failing, then I say end.
Minneapolis School District releases disturbing results of workforce diversity study during interviews and surveys. Teachers of color described difficult working conditions and cultural insensitivity. They said negative interactions happen daily and they feel isolated and not supported. They also believe they are put in tough positions or schools based on race.
Good job, Democrats. Way to go, DFL.
Right.
Education Minnesota, you guys are doing an awesome job.
Right.
Awesome job. I mean, there's not a conservative out there that has any responsibility for this whatsoever. This is a product 100% of the DFL and its Education Minnesota Masters.
As for hiring challenges, teachers of color indicated the district took a passive approach and relied on career fairs or websites, which showed little commitment to real diversity because a minority candidate pool wasn't targeted.
You mean they don't practice what they preach?
Look, we already have affirmative action laws. We already have laws against discrimination based off somebody's skin color, sexual orientation, or religion. So should we not just be looking at individuals that have decided and chosen to go in to the education field and then hired individuals based off of their quality and ability to go and educate the students? I mean, that everything is already in place to ensure that the right people are hired and that people are not discriminated against.
That's not entirely true, John.
I'm sorry.
Not entirely true, because if you read here, Maggie Sullivan, the chief of human resources, she says they're going to hire additional recruiting coordinators.
Oh.
So that, you know, all the pieces weren't in place because we didn't have enough recruiting coordinators to tell them who and how they should. How about instead of hiring additional recruiting coordinators, just go hire some black teachers? Just cut out the middle part.
Right.
Just cut out that little middle part right there where you're going to spend a lot more money that doesn't need to be spent to hire somebody to tell you how to hire.
Or just hire qualified teachers. Stop looking at this through the lens of color. It's been heading this way for a while, and we mentioned it earlier. And again, this is where your slippery slope ends up landing. Years ago, you started to see arguments inside the public school system. It's because of what Drew just said. It's because the public school system has been failing for years, and they refuse to look in the mirror and admit the problem is them. So instead, what do they go do? They go looking for excuses. And suddenly, somewhere, someone decided that we were doing really well in this country. Not the best, it's never going to be perfect, but we were doing really well in this country when it comes to race relations. We elected President Barack Obama, and there's a lot of people that stood to lose a lot of power in the process. And suddenly this idea came about that, well, these grades in these classrooms are obviously low because the teacher at the front of the classroom does not have the same skin color as the majority of students. So how in the world can that qualified teacher who chose to go and be an educator, how can they possibly go and educate those children if they don't look like they do? And it stuck. And this is where we are now. A study done, and it touts disturbing results of workplace diversity. So if we just match up all the children with teachers that look like them, we're going to just get amazing test scores? Is that the idea here? Yeah. Right?
Yeah. Yeah, because that's the magic little formula that's been missing, is this idea that students can't learn unless their teacher looks like them. I had very few teachers when I was growing up that looked like me. Most of my teachers were female. That immediately cut all those out.
Sure. Right?
And then a majority of my teachers, when I grew up in Miami, were of color. My memory of elementary school and middle school and junior high, most of my teachers were of color. I never even occurred to me that, I don't know if I can learn from this person.
Right.
They don't look like me.
Of course not.
They're first of all, they're women.
Right. How could she relate to me? Well, okay, not me. That's not a fair assessment by any stretch, but you know what we're saying. And look, what about, right? What about these kids who are swept up in this? Okay. Because this stuff doesn't remain in, you know, just the newspaper. It doesn't remain on websites. It gets talked about on shows like ours because it should get talked about. It gets talked about amongst families. It gets talked about within the schools. The kids know this. What happens when these kids get older and they get out into the real world and suddenly they're working for a business where the individual who is their boss also doesn't look like, or is that, maybe that's the point? Is that what I?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Right.
I just landed in a scary place.
Yeah, exactly.
This is very nefarious.
And they're so bought into this idea that the teachers have to look like the students that they're teaching. How far do you take that?
Right.
I mean, should white kids only have white teachers?
Right.
Should black kids only have black? I mean, are we going to go back to, you know, segregating our education system based on race? Is that where I don't know how far they want to take this. There doesn't seem to be any sort of conversation of, all right, you know, we want to make sure that we have diversity in the schools, and we want to make sure we have diversity in our teaching staffs. But they keep hammering this point that kids do better when their teachers look like them. Well, if that's the case, and we want the best education possible for our kids, and we're going to buy, I'm not saying I buy into this
logic. Sure, sure, sure.
But if we're going to buy into, collectively going to buy into this logic, then why don't we talk about segregating schools again?
Right.
If the idea and the goal is, I think we can all agree, we all want our kids to be as successful as possible. We want them to have the best education that they could possibly attain. And if the research is so sound that having teachers that look like them is so important and improves their performance, then why aren't we talking about going full-on segregation back in schools?
We live in a world where these two very short paragraphs and sentences are not deemed as a big negative. You ready? Having more teachers of color in classrooms has a positive impact on student learning overall, mounting research shows. Okay. A diverse teaching corps can help eliminate racial disparities in school discipline, and over time, it may even help close the achievement gap between students of color and their white peers. This is the one that really gets me, though. When students of color are matched with teachers who look like them, the students' perceptions and attitudes about school improve, researchers say, and they are more likely to graduate from high school. That's a problem. They shouldn't be improving just because of the color of the teacher's skin. And again, apply that to, my student can't be in your classroom. Why? Well, because my child, as you can tell, is white and that teacher is black. And how can that black teacher properly go and teach my white student? How awful would that be? But that's exactly what they're saying. 651-989-5855. You can use #250 on your smartphone and reach out to us. We'll take your phone calls coming up. Oh, and we're also going to get into how apparently VeggieTales is also racist.